Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio. Live. This is the Gus Bradley Show. Gus Bradley Show. Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by EverBank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the final edition of the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus Bradley is very busy right now. He's got a lot going on with filling some coaching positions or a coach position and other things to tend to. And so we scoured the halls and we got the general manager, Dave Caldwell, to sit in for the final show. Thanks for coming, Dave.
Thanks for having me. And as I sit here real quick, I'd like to make an adjustment to the show as we start off, if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the introduction, I think, is a little off because they say former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman, where I consider you a current Jaguar. So
oh.
I think we should, you know.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
I think that's something that going into next season we
can
should
Can I get a paycheck
adjust.
Like a current Jaguar?
Well, we didn't say current Jaguar player. We just said current. We're all Jaguars.
What's the
here,
minimum
right?
now?
Right?
I'll take it.
$460?
Is that what it is now for a first-year player?
I think next year is going to go up to 460, yeah.
What is 460 for a first-year player? Because you know, I remember, and not to go old school, but I remember I was a first-round draft pick and 14th overall pick of the draft. And my first contract was, and I'm looking for a little analysis from you. My first contract, 4 years, $2.1 million. And I got, if I remember correctly, it was – $675 to sign. I think after taxes, a little over $500,000. What round would that put me in today's NFL?
That's probably about fifth round, I would say.
Really?
Yeah.
But the guaranteed money was probably higher back then, as opposed to
the guaranteed would be the signing bonus for the rookies. There's no guaranteed money in their paragraph five. But the signing bonus would be guaranteed, so the 560 would be about right.
About right for a fifth-round pick now.
Yeah, and I'm going off the top of my head, but it's about that. I know wow. I know. Once you get into the top of the fourth round, you're about $1 million. So as you trickle down.
Man, you know. To be born a little bit later. Mom and Dad, why didn't you just wait a little while?
I know, right?
But you know what the crazy thing is that every player in a generation seems to have said that. Because I remember Joe Klecko. Marty Lyons, who was a first-round pick of the Jets, who I had the good fortune of playing with when I was in New York, and he was, I think, 14th overall as well in 1979, and we were, kind of comparing contracts, because he was kind of wondering what mine was based upon what his was, and he was saying the same thing.
It's amazing. I remember when I was a scouting assistant and I was looking at the players, the rookie contracts we were signing, and I want to say they were right around $195,000, $200,000 for their first year, and I'm like, man, I can't imagine if I could ever make that type of money. What it'd be like?
I think my first, for those that don't know, when we're talking about signing bonus in paragraph five in an NFL standard NFL contract, and it hasn't changed for years, it's probably the same thing.
Yep.
A signing bonus is you write your name, sign your name, and then that check is yours. Now the payment of it might be different as far as payout. Paragraph five is your annual salaries. And so annual salaries is what every player would get. And so you got, 17 weeks of the season? Some teams pay once every week, so you get 17 paychecks. So that's 1/17 of, if you make $1 million, 1/17 would be paid out every week.
Yep, from week one to the end of the season.
And in those paragraphs, a lot of people say, well, this player signed this big deal. It was a $100 million contract. This is the upfront money, and this is the remainder of it. Typical NFL player contracts, the signing bonus is guaranteed, and then paragraph fives are not, for the most part.
Yeah, especially for rookies, they're not. Some of the higher picks, the first rounders, the whole thing's guaranteed. But as you trickle down the second, third, fourth, all the way to seventh round, those are not guaranteed. Your free agents, as we approach free agency here in March, your guys that you covet, you'll probably have your first to second years guaranteed. And there's usually about a formula that agents try to get to. It's somewhere between the signing bonus or roster bonus plus your guaranteed money equals about, 35 to 40% of the contract. So
they're trying to get 35, 40. I mean, they'd love to have 50%
They'd love to have
the
100% of it
yeah,
guaranteed
absolutely.
Is what they'd like to have. But that will never happen, hopefully. But for the most part, the you know, I think they like to be in that 30% to 40% range of the guaranteed money.
Do you ever catch yourself, you know, having started where you were, where paragraph five salaries were what they were, where it is today, and that, I mean, the league has just grown exponentially year after year. Do you ever catch yourself, you know, filling your role as general manager, feel like you're playing Monopoly money?
I don't, and it's funny because I always get the line from the agents, well, it's not your money. But I always feel like if it was mine, I'd probably give it away easier than when I'm giving away somebody else's money like Shad. So I'm always trying to be a little bit more fiscally responsible when I'm dealing with Shad's money than I probably am with when I deal with my own money. It's all relative. These players, they earn it now. And as you know, the life expectancy of a player's career, it's not very long. And they're 21, 22 years old. And, you know, if they could play 2 or 3 years and if they make $3 or $4 million, well, it's not going to last them the rest of their life these days. So, but, you know, they try to make it when they can, and they go through a lot, and it's not easy. I know it's a game, and I know it's we look at it as a game, but these guys go through a lot in the course of a season.
Yeah, it's interesting that when you talk about the average career span of an NFL player, I think back when I was involved with that process of player and union rep and vice president of the union, you know, the statistics were all out there. The average career length was about 3.5 years or 3.6. Has that about the same? I mean, with all of the analytics that are involved in football now, has that changed at all?
No, it's about accurate, and that's when, you know, players, they get vested after their fourth year, and if they play 4 years, they're vested. So I think that's kind of where the league is, and if they can make it 4 full years, they'll be, you know, get their retirement. But it depends on the position. You know, I know we did a study on punt returners, and the average career of a punt returner is less than 2 years.
Wow.
And so that's
is that because of the nature of he's typically a fringe player and not a positional player?
Well, I think it's the nature of the physical makeup of the player. Usually, they're a smaller guy that is very athletic, very fast, but. And being a punt returner, you take a lot of shots, so that's not...
That does not make me feel good, Dave, because I just got done prepping a video package for Jaguars.com on Rashad Green, who averaged, I think it was, 16.7 yards a return, led the National Football League in punt returns, yep. And now you're telling me the average career length of Rashad Green is going to be 2 years.
Well, the good thing about Rashad is he's a receiver, and he's bigger than your average punt returner, so... hopefully we can use him in that role for a couple of years. But that's the average. So we drafted Rashad, and I'm sure he'll beat the averages to hopefully about 8 or 9.
How much do you guys, you know, because reading and listening to what's going on now around the league with the openings, et cetera, and the Cleveland's got the situation where Sashi Brown is director of operations and control of the roster, and they're going to be using
– Former Jaguar.
Yeah, former Jaguar, using some analytics in the process that they use to evaluate players. And I know Tony Khan is a big part of that with the Jaguars organization. And analytics really probably wasn't even in existence for the most part when you first started. How much do you guys rely on that above and beyond just evaluating the player?
Well, I was fortunate where I came from a tree of general managers that really believed heavily in statistical analysis and Bill Polian and Thomas Dimitroff in Atlanta. So even every year we got more and more involved in statistical analysis. So I had a little bit of background with that. And then we grew in Atlanta. We had a great little analytic department there and use it as a great resource for us. And then when we came here, Tony has taken it to another level for us. And it's a great asset for our organization and for our coaching staff and personnel staff that we can use. And it's a great tool to have in your toolbox, so to speak. It can't necessarily always drive decisions, but it can help complement for you to feel good about the decisions you're making and to give you the evidence is this is a good decision and you have the analytics to back it up, or you're going down this path and analytics don't show that this is the right way to go. Let's go back and revisit it and make sure we're making the right decision. And sometimes even though the analytics may say don't go this route, you still may go that route because you have a lot more information that some things that, you know, the analytics can't measure. Mm-hmm. Heart, toughness, you know, some of those things that we feel good about.
Yeah, that's one thing that, you know, through, you know, all the analytics that are out there now, which some of them the teams use, the big services, and then also some that fans can access, about grading players, et cetera. That's all really analytics. And I always wondered who's inputting the data, so to speak.
Right.
You know, and which eye is trained to actually input the proper data.
Right.
You know, that's the one thing that kind of makes me cautious of it in some situations.
Yeah, and some of it's very subjective, too. Yeah. So you're right there. And that's why you just can't say, well, they don't like show this. And you have to go back, and I'll give you a good example. We were playing a specific team that we were targeting in a corner, and the analytics showed that he was one of 16 on the deep ball. He only had one completion out of 16 attempts that teams won the deep ball. So we went back and looked at him, and nine of them, the receiver ran right by him, but the quarterback either overthrew or underthrew it.
Right.
Two of them guys dropped, and then, you know, one of them a guy caught on him, and the other two he made plays on. So, you know, you have to go back and do the work when you find something like that, just to make sure you're making the right decision.
When you look at coaching, I would think that analytics, when it comes to evaluating opponents' coaches and play calling tendencies, it would have a huge service to a defensive staff.
Yeah, and there it is, defensively and offensively too. But I think because you want to self-evaluate your own play calling. And Tony does some really good statistical analysis early in the week for our defensive staff that gets it in their hands later in the week. And same thing for the offensive, that, you know, coaches do have tendencies, and they do have favorite plays, and they do have favorite parts of the field where they like to call certain plays. And, you know, if we can get a beat on that, it does help the defensive play calling for sure.
All right, well, let's take a break here. And this is the Gus Bradley Show, but we've got the general manager, Dave Caldwell, and we'll – and some analytics conversation and jump into some Jaguars conversation right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show with the general manager, Dave Caldwell. And this segment's brought to you by Beer Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Back to some conversation here on the Jaguars, the defensive coordinator position. I know that you're actively involved with that with the head coach, Gus Bradley. How's that going? Progress being made? Anything to update fans on?
Well, yeah, that's why I'm here tonight, because Coach Bradley is deep into interview process and interview mode. So he was we had a potential candidate in today, and I defer to Coach Bradley and our coaching staff on those decisions, but it seems like he's spearheading a very thorough search, and I think it'll be very clear to us the direction we go when we're done with the search.
Last week, I posed the question to Gus, would it be difficult to fill a position when your contract is 1 year?
Right.
Do you see that as maybe being a hurdle, or is that something that with the structure of the organization, it's not a big deal?
It's not a hurdle. And, you know, Gus's situation is very fluid. And although he's on a one-year contract now, it doesn't mean that necessarily moving into the season he'll be on a one-year contract either. So, you know, we just got to make sure we get the right pieces in place here. And then moving forward, those things will take care of itself. And so it's one of those things where I think across the league, coaches look at our ownership, and they look at the pieces we have in place here. And this league, at many spots, is a one-year contract. As we've seen this year and in past years, guys come in, and even though they have a four-year contract, they only last 1 year. So
right.
It's a very result-oriented business. We're a little contrarian in our approach here and the way we've built this and trying to build this. And we want to make sure that the coach we bring in has every opportunity to succeed. And by bringing in a defensive coordinator and tying him in with Gus, won't be a problem moving forward.
Were you excited with what happened around the league in as far as the openings? Because what was it, seven openings, and then there's an eighth that's kind of undecided with Jim Caldwell in Detroit. And with seven openings, that means there's a lot of quality coaches
that
are going to be out there looking for work. Advantageous to you guys to have this situation where essentially almost 25% of the league is got guys looking for work?
Well, if you have stability, it's advantageous because, you know, transition is difficult. It's difficult on the players. It's difficult fielding a staff. So I don't know about the turnover from last year, if any of that those coaches.
Yeah, I don't remember the number.
I don't think any of them made the playoffs this year. Correct me if I'm wrong. So So that's good. So, you know, whether or not any of the coaching changes next year, those guys make the playoffs, I don't know. But sustainability is, if you look across the league at the perennial top tier teams, is the way to go.
Yeah, and it's been fun watching you and Gus's relationship through the years and how you guys interact. It's amazing. I mean, you guys communicate on a daily basis. Your offices are very close together. The part of the remodel here, your office is over there now with the coaching
yep.
staff. And I was reading an article today and then also watching a video on Bruce Arians and Steve Keim and how they talked about the success of their organization is directly tied to their relationship.
Yep.
And then you, obviously, with the relationship you have with Gus, feel that that is an extremely important asset going forward.
Yeah, and I think that it's so difficult to win a game on a Sunday that on the field of play that you have a lot of battles to win there, that if you have those battles that you have to fight on a daily basis, it makes it very difficult to win on Sundays. And Gus and I will have our battles, I promise you that, but it's not anything that is detracts from the team or is counterproductive. It's, you know, sometimes we have strong opinions of different things, and we work through those opinions, and it's not all happy-go-lucky, and we'll have some serious conversations. But at the end of the day, we know when the door closes and we leave our office, it's what's best for the team.
What do you do to settle an argument in the case that you can't come to agreement? Do we flip a coin? Do we arm wrestle? Do we break out the old boxing gloves? What do you do?
No, I think we at times we'll bring in other opinions. You know, we'll say let's see what Coach X has to say, or let's see what personnel person has to say. And at times we may meet with four or five other people and say, hey, this is what we're going through. What do you guys think about this? I know at one point in time I brought in a former colleague of mine to evaluate our roster about 12 weeks into the season, and just say, I said, I don't care how our players got here or what we paid them or where we drafted them. I just want your honest opinion of where they're at and how they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I said, sometimes I get so close to it and our personnel people get so close to it and our coaching staff get so close to it that I would just like an honest opinion with no ulterior motives as to how player X is doing, how player Y is doing, and where you see him in the league. It was very, very good, and we sat down with Gus and some of our coaches and talked about his findings. Some of them we agreed with, some of them we disagreed with, but that's the nature of the personnel business.
Yeah, how valuable was that? I mean, when you talk about that, it's what you do with it, right? I mean, you get the information. Let's say he disagrees with maybe your opinion
sure.
on player X.
Right.
What do you do with that information? Do you maybe self-evaluate and say, well, maybe I'm looking through my draft-colored eyes because they're my draft pick
sure.
or they're my free agent acquisition? How do you change your thought process after you get an independent evaluation like that?
Well, it's the same thing that we do with analytics. It's like, well, the analytics aren't showing it, so you go back and you watch more tape and you say, let's make sure that we're just not looking at this because we drafted this player in the second round and we really like him as a person. Let's make sure that he's good enough to win with and he's good enough to take us to where we need to be.
Yeah, interesting. Along the front with the staff.
Now, that's not easy to do when you take a guy in the second round and you're like, oh, God, I'm not saying that. But if you invest into a player and you're a guy that invests
sure.
into him and say, well, but, you know, you got to put your ego aside and do what's best for the organization.
And that's not easy to do.
No.
You know, because, I mean, you're talking about your body of work.
Sure.
Going back to the staff a little bit, Doug Marone reportedly in Nashville today to interview with the Tennessee Titans. I know that's kind of been out there, broadcast, mm-hmm. that he's been a candidate at other places. It also was reported that Chris Polian, who works with you in your department, has had opportunities to interview. Any information on that, or how successful those are going, and is that something that you encourage?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Chris did not get the job in Tennessee. I think they named the general manager today.
John Robinson,
very qualified candidate. And, you know, Chris is we're happy to have him here. He's a vital part of our personnel department. Does a great job on our pro side and oversees some of our college scouting. So that's been really good. And then Doug Marone is our O-line coach. So it's a good sign when other teams are looking at what the Jaguars are doing, whether it's coaching or personnel. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a personnel chief here leave in the next day for a very good promotion too on our side of the building. And
Wait, back up. You're going to have somebody leave your staff
yeah.
for a very good promotion.
Yeah, very well deserved.
That's great.
Yeah.
No names?
No names.
Okay.
No
can't, names can't release that today?
Can't release that today.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, but it's very well deserved and a good situation. So, that's good. You know, we want to have upward mobility. Obviously, I'd like to have it here if there's availability to do it, but we have some great personnel people on our staff currently that can fill those voids too.
All right. Well, I'm going to beat you up over this commercial break, see if I can find out that piece of information. So let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show with General Manager Dave Caldwell on the Gus Bradley Show right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show with the General Manager Dave Caldwell tonight. And Dave, with the NFL openings starting to close, Chip Kelly was named the head coach in San Francisco. Ben McAdoo was named the head coach with the New York Giants a couple days ago. I think it was Hugh Jackson, Cleveland, Adam Gase, Miami, Philadelphia. Doug Peterson, the reports are that he's going to be the head coach. Tennessee still undecided, Tampa still undecided, and Detroit still, I guess you could say, undecided, because General Manager Bob Quinn there is going to make a decision on Jim Caldwell, and you've got experience with Jim Caldwell. I thought the job that Jim Caldwell did the year before last did a tremendous job.
Sure.
And when you look at that and look at the way that all of that is happening now, what are your thoughts on this many openings happening? And in some cases, some decisions are made that just kind of make you go, are you really serious?
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at a case, Coach Caldwell, who's a great man, and did a great job, 11-5 last year, and they had some things happen, some injuries this year, and that, what were they, 6-10 or 7-9?
And had a great finish.
Yeah, you know, things didn't go their way early in the year, and it's like, well, I don't think he forgot how to coach. You know, it's the same guy that took you to 11-5. So what went wrong? And, I don't know those answers. I'm not in their building, and, you know, that's for them to figure out. But that's the thing, that you see a coach that had two successful years, and then you had one bad year, and then all of a sudden that means you got to move on and fire them. Sometimes it doesn't make a lot of sense, because in the NFL, it's very difficult to get a lot better, and it's very easy to get worse than it is to get better. And you always have to be careful that, when you make a move, make sure it's the move for the right reasons, and it is to get better.
And this relates to a little bit with what you guys are going through with the defensive coordinator search. You know, trying to get a coach to match personnel that may already be there. Ben McAdoo with the Giants, he worked with Eli Manning. Chip Kelly going to San Francisco. A lot of people say that this would be a great system for Colin Kaepernick. How important is that to find the match between coaching style and the players that are there?
Well, I think that the coach should define the personnel. You know, when you have a head coach, he should define what he's looking for, and you should do your best to give him the tools to succeed and with personnel. If you have some existing pieces in place and you feel like that the coach you bring in can manage what you have and then you add to it, that seems like a very reasonable thought process to do it. And what they did in San Francisco, it seems like that's a pretty reasonable move of what they did. So that's the hard part. When you really want to change things over and you have this personnel of a 4-3 defense, and then all of a sudden you said, you know what, let's go to a 3-4 and complete different approach and philosophy, that's challenging. You better have a really good other side of the ball to keep you afloat until you get those pieces in place, because it's not a one off season fix.
Yeah, that would be an incredible transition.
Yeah,
that typically takes a couple years just to find the personnel match. Getting to going back to when you said you brought in an outside personnel guy to evaluate your own roster, I was curious. Your quarterback, Blake Bortles.
Mm-hmm.
What were his thoughts on Blake Bortles?
He liked actually coming out of college when he did him, but he was really impressed at the transition he made from year one to year two, and or I should say transformation. He said, you know, you're obviously on the right track with this guy, and sky's the limit for him, and there's no major issues he saw with him and getting us to where we need to be with Blake Bortles.
And that was just a straight film evaluation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the impressive thing about Blake is, and I made mention of this to Gus before on the show, is that the thing that impressed me the most was the consistency and preparation from him.
Yep.
And some of them I could see, and some of them I heard.
Right.
And that all season long, the consistency that he displayed and the commitment that he displayed from a time standpoint was unbelievable.
Right.
Is that on par with what am I right?
Well, you're
on
par.
You're
on. You are on par with that, and you're on par with what that job entails. You know, in terms of being a starting quarterback in the NFL, and Blake Bortles here on a Monday night till 7 o'clock at night, or a day off early in the morning. A, taking care of his body, then B, taking care of his mind and studying film. Thursday nights being here till 8 o'clock at night, and. Those are the things that were very impressive with him, and not just him, but you know the rest of the quarterback, you know Chad Henne too, being right there by his side. So, big tribute to those guys and the effort they put in, and I could only see them wrapping it up next year.
Care to share who he disagreed with you on?
I won't put him in that position.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show with the general manager Dave Caldwell. Quick break here, and we'll come right back and talk a little Jaguars and also things from around the National Football League right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show with the general manager, Dave Caldwell. And Dave, the calendar coming up for you guys, the Senior Bowl is on January 30th, and the Jaguars staff is going to go there and coach that game. You've done it the last 2 years. From a general manager standpoint, you know, coaches, you know, are working with the players on the practice field in the meeting rooms. Is that something that you get more of a look at in the meeting rooms and the practice field than other general managers also can get may be able to get a look at?
Absolutely. We get to put them through a typical Jacksonville Jaguar week of work, and from meetings to taking them from the meeting room to on the field to learning our system. So it helps us not only pinpoint the guys that we really feel like are good fits for our team, but also eliminate the guys that we feel like aren't good fits for our team. And
probably easier to find that than it is the other, right?
Yep, that is true. And so it allows us to knock out a lot of work that we normally do at the combine, like we do interviews at the combine. Well, a lot of these guys that are going to the combine, well, we knock out the interviews there, so there's no sense in us doing it there. In the spring, we go to do college workouts and do that. Well, we're coaching them for a week of practice. We don't need to go to watch them run around without any pads on. So it just really gets us ahead of the curve on the work schedule for the draft, and gives us a deep insight look on a guy for a week. You might be able to fake a 15-minute interview. You might be able to fake an hour workout, but it's hard to fake it for a whole week.
Right.
And so it's very telling for us, some of these guys, and we've had success with it too, so it's been good.
Looking back over the last 2 years, I mean, there's a number of guys that ended up on the Jaguars roster that have participated in the Senior Bowl, whether it been on the team that you guys were working with or the other side. What was the one player that you maybe going into the Senior Bowl didn't think much of, and then you came out of the Senior Bowl and said, well, this is a guy that we want, and you got him?
Right. Well, the Nick Marshall one is one last year that, you know, we weren't sure going into it. Obviously, he wasn't going to play quarterback for us, and knew he was a tremendous athlete. And then you got down there for the week and got to coach him up and taught him some read technique as a corner, and saw how he competed and for the ball in the air and did a lot of things in coverage. And you're like, well, this guy's only been doing it for a day, and he's doing it better than about six of these other guys that have been doing it for the whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you say, okay, as the week went on, he got better and better and better. And then throughout the draft process, we were like, should we take Nick? And we were a couple times we were going to take him, and there were some other guys at other positions that we felt like we needed. And then he went undrafted, and our coaching staff coached him. He had a great repertoire with our coaches, and we knew him from the week, and this is the place he wanted to come. And
that had to help. I mean, because his familiarity
helped.
With staff.
Definitely helped, and he knew, and then he came in here, and he knew our defense, you know, for that week he learned it. So it was good, and he had the best opportunity to make a team, and he did, and he came in and he competed well for us.
A question about Nick, because prior to and watching training camp, I remember having thoughts in my head that here's a guy, Nick Marshall, that's very raw, played quarterback at the college level, and played it at a high level. And as a quarterback, you have a, I don't want to say all college quarterbacks gain an understanding of NFL defenses, but some of them certainly would.
Sure.
Could he be a guy that could play free safety for you guys? Because, you know, you and Gus have talked extensively about how difficult that position is to fill, and you actually even brought up that it might be as difficult as finding a quarterback.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It's challenging, and especially in our system. And it is something that we have discussed, Gus and I, with Nick. And even throughout this year when we had some injuries at safety, you know, we put Peyton Thompson back there, and we said, well, what about Nick? And the thought process was that he's only been playing corner for a year. Let's let him get through this year first and then see where he's at as a corner. And I think the other thought process, if you have a really good corner, it's hard to move him to safety too, because – good corners are hard to find.
Yeah, it's hard. Is that the case though anymore? I mean, is it harder to find corners than safeties?
That's discussion that we're having, and so it is challenging, and so we'll see this year, and we'll see in the off season. But it's something that we've discussed, and I think it'll dictate what will dictate is the moves we make in the off season. What do we fill in free agency? What do we fill in the draft? And then see where he's at.
To play free safety, the range is a big deal. Single high safety, a guy playing center field that can cover from sideline to sideline on a deep ball. And speed has got to be a huge factor, but instincts also help make up for maybe a little lack of speed.
Yep.
Do you have a number in your mind that a free safety maybe has to run to be able to play that position? And what kind of time does Nick Marshall run?
Well, he should be in the 4.4 range, but with that being said, you can run a 4.5 if you're very instinctive. And sometimes the play speed is much better than the time speed. And as long as you can get off the hash and you can anticipate, if you run a 4.5, well, that's okay if you're smart and you're competitive and you're getting a foot and a half jump on some of these guys. Nick is probably right around a 4.5, but he's 6'1", 210 pounds. And he's a really good size and strong kid too. So that's plenty fast enough, and he has that anticipation that we talked about. The other issue with the free safety is the big space and tackling, and it's so difficult when you're a single high safety to come down and you got all that space, and you have Adrian Peterson that just ran in through the hole, and then you got to tackle him one-on-one in space. Could be one of the harder things to
do. And that guy weighs 240 pounds, yeah, and he can run you over.
Could be one of the harder things to do in the NFL, mm-hmm. You know. So,
and with the safety position, to kind of stick with that a little bit, the guy that I wish I saw more of this year, because I remember watching his college tape at Louisville, you know, after the draft, prior to the draft, you know, you focus on, at least for me, for broadcast purposes, you focus in on the upper end of the draft because that's when we're broadcasting. After the draft, you go and you watch all of the prospects that you guys got. And watching James Sample at Louisville, the things that I came away with from watching him, very good ball skills, number one. And number two was his open field tackling, as you mentioned, is kind of hard to find.
Yep.
Was very good.
Yep.
Is that a guy you wish you saw more of?
It is. And when he played this year, I know even in the New England game, he made a great play on a 7-cut where he jumped a route and almost took it back for a pick six. And I think that was the first game that he played in this year. But, for sure, it was a shame. We were expecting big things out of James through OTAs, and unfortunately broke his wrist late and then missed a lot of training camp. But as he came on, from the day he's gotten here, he's acted like a pro and practiced like a pro and prepared like a pro. So I think we're looking for big things out of him next year.
Physically doing well?
Physically doing very well. Yeah.
Okay, I know that you get it up on injured reserve. All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll get an update on Dante Fowler from the general manager himself right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show with the general manager, Dave Caldwell. And as I mentioned, going to a break there, James Sample seems to be doing great. According to you, Dave, with his injury that he ended up on injury reserve. With Dante Fowler, the Christmas present that you don't get to open until next year.
Right.
I mean, it always stinks. How is he doing with the ACL?
He's doing really well. He was out there running yesterday. Looked good. I think they did a 12 60-yard sprints, and Really looks good physically, really training hard with Tom Mislinski, our strength and conditioning coach, and doing his rehab, and very strong, powerful guy, man. I tell you what, feel really good about where he's at and where he's heading. He just needs to continue to be consistent with it from now on until you know, the off-season program starts, but no setbacks for him quite yet.
How did he handle, because going back and reading his history, he'd never been hurt.
Right.
You know, and sometimes guys that have never been hurt have a hard time kind of mentally adjusting to being hurt and not playing. And of course, now you talk about the adjustment to the NFL on top of that. Sometimes that's difficult.
Right. Not on top of that, he was hurt, but we were I shouldn't say we were hard on him, but we were demanding of what we asked him to do this year. And where most guys have a season-ending injury, they just, you know, go to rehab, or they might go back to their hometown and rehab. Well, we asked him to be here every day, every morning, 6:45, get his treatment done, go to his team meeting at 8:15, go to special teams meetings, go to his positional meetings, get his workout in, and break down the opposing team's offensive line for 17 weeks. So he went through a full season plus doing rehab with no reward, and that being game day. So it was a challenge for him, and he hung in there. But we were demanding on him, so most guys in his position wouldn't have to do that, but we know the asset we have in him, and we know how good he can be, so we wanted to make sure that he got the most out of this year.
I remember watching his college tape, and it brought back memories of a guy that I went against in college. His name was John Trashcan Burns. That's what his nickname was, wow. Trashcan. And he would generate an incredible amount of energy force in a very short area.
Yep.
And that's what Dante reminded me of when I watched
him.
Yeah,
he is a violent player. I do remember that. And when you see him, he's a thick-boned, sturdy defense. I remember maybe about a month after the injury, he was standing in the training room, and I was like, who is that? And I was from afar, and I walked in the training room. I'm like, I am so upset right now. He goes, what's wrong? I said, I was wondering who this was. I saw a 6'3", broad-shouldered guy. I'm like, and I come and realize it's you, and you're not going to play it down for us this year.
Well, and hey, as a part of looking ahead to 2016, he plays that Leo position, premium position.
Yep.
Is that a position that you even – I mean, because it's not just Leo.
Sure.
It's the Leo, and it's the other side, outside rusher. I mean, that's got to be a position you're going to look at very hard.
Absolutely. You can never have enough rushers. I know it's the old cliche, and with Dante's, not only is he a very good edge rusher, but he's very versatile too. So even if we got one or two or how many rushers we have, that would just open up the possibilities for us on defense on how we use Dante. He can play in a two-point stance. He can line up in the A-gap. He can put his hand down and be a three technique and as a sub rusher. He was a defensive tackle when he was a freshman at Florida anyway. So he's got a very broad skill set where he's going to be versatile enough where even if we get another Leo or if we get whatever we get, he's going to be able to help us no matter where.
Safe to assume that the edge rusher is priority number one?
I would not assume that, but it would be if we think Dante's an edge rusher, you know, that could be fill a need there, but I wouldn't assume it, but I would say that there'll probably be an influx of edge rushers.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break here. Edge rushers. At least I got that. It might be an influx of that edge rusher. All right. From the general manager himself, right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And it's the Gus Bradley Show with the general manager, the last edition of the Gus Bradley Show, sadly to say. But it's great having the general manager in here, Dave. Thanks for coming in. And the calendar you talk about, it might be safe to assume that edge rushers might be an influx of them. Free agency starts, I guess you could say, on March 6th because that's the legal tampering period.
Yep.
Which March 6th at noon is when the tampering period begins, then on March 9th at 4 p.m.
If it's legal, is it tampering still?
Well, that's what they call it. But, I mean, the crazy thing is, and I'm going to ask you a question here in a minute that kind of relates to that. if you have a legal tampering period, then wouldn't illegal tampering happen before then? I mean, you know, all these dates that they said, I mean, isn't it really just for posture?
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. It's a crazy world we live in. It's like the Wild West.
Good answer, because I didn't want you to say, well, yeah, probably still will happen. Might get you into trouble there.
Yeah.
If you were the commissioner for a day, what would you change
don't ask
about
me that
the league? Why? You have something in mind. I can tell by your reaction.
Yeah. I can't go there.
Can't go there?
No.
I want to hear the answer to that at some point, someday, because that's obviously
a how much time we got left?
We only got a couple minutes before we got to take a break.
Yeah, I don't have enough time to answer that question.
That's
what were you going to say? What would I change?
Yeah, if you could pick one thing that you would change. You don't have to go into all of them. If you could pick one thing that you could change as commissioner for a day, what would it be?
Make me the commissioner
for
the next
years.
20 years. Yeah.
No, make like $47 million a year like Roger Goodell.
Not a bad gig.
Yeah,
huh?
That's not bad.
I'd have to think about it. That would be the politically correct answer to go with.
From your standpoint as a general manager, okay, for the dates, free agency,
well, I'll give you,
roster
limits. I'll give you one thing that has been a thorn in my side is to have every NFL player have a passport. How about that? Simple.
For traveling abroad.
Traveling abroad.
Yeah, with the London game.
Yeah. We played 3 games in London now and more games internationally, and it shouldn't be that difficult for every NFL player.
I'm just kind of surprised that they don't do that automatically with the expansion in the international series.
It would make common sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you would think, but it doesn't. All right, let's take a break, and we come back. We'll quiz the general manager about his thoughts on some playoff football coming up this Saturday and this Sunday in the National Football League right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. It's going to be quite some time before the Jaguar players come back here at Everbank. I believe it's April 18th that the off-season workout programs may begin for organizations that have a head coach or staff that is returning. So with that being said, there's still plenty of football activities going on this weekend. Saturday's lineup features the Chiefs at the Patriots. And here for the last Gus Bradley Show, I've been kind enough to sit in with us, General Manager Dave Caldwell. And with that game, Dave, the Chiefs at the Patriots, what's your thoughts on that game? The Chiefs have been on a roll now, 11 in a row.
They are. They're playing good football. And good defense, mistake-free offense. It'll be an interesting game. It'll be an interesting game.
Care to pick one?
No. I'm bad at the pick'em games.
Are you?
Yeah.
I was really good last week. I stomped Pacelli, by the way. I ran the table last week.
That doesn't
week.
Surprise me.
Yeah.
And Tony, ever pick a game?
No. Now, sometimes we do it just to be contrarian, but I think I actually hit on all of them last week. The 8 o'clock, 8:15 start game Saturday, Green Bay Packers at the Arizona Cardinals, and what the Arizona Cardinals have been able to do over the last couple of years has been nothing short of impressive.
Yeah, the Green Bay Packers that game reminds me of my time, my third year in Atlanta. I think we won the division. We had a second round bye, played really good throughout the year. Green Bay won their wild card game, very similar, and then just came in and torched us.
Mm-hmm.
And torched us at home.
And Green Bay they weren't playing well at the end of the season. They go to Washington.
It was the same exact scenario.
Aaron Rodgers kind of looks like he did at the end of the season and all of a sudden turns it on.
That'll be a fun game to watch. Both those teams are really good, well put together teams.
The Sunday lineup, 105, Seattle at Carolina.
It's going to be a physical game. I know that.
You think Marshawn Lynch plays?
I don't know.
Does anybody know?
I don't know, yeah. hell of a player.
If hell of a player for sure, and he's a different cat. The 440 game, Pittsburgh Steelers at the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning going to be the starter for the Denver Broncos, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger banged up. Antonio Brown has not practiced yet, and Denver plays really good defense.
Yeah. It'll be I'm sure Ben will play. He's tough. Antonio, that's out of everybody's hands except, they got to go
doctors.
Through the protocol. And those will be 4 fun games to watch.
Will you be glued to the TVs?
I will be glued. Last week I was glued. This week I'll be glued. So I look forward to I get angry this time of year when I'm watching playoff football.
Do you watch it from the standpoint of enjoying the game, or are you in personnel evaluation mode?
I'm in team evaluation, and I'm like, I look at those teams, and I'm like, where do we need to improve to make sure we're playing here next January?
That's a great way to look at it. Dave, thanks for sitting in.
Thanks for having me.
Look forward to next year, folks, right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll talk to everybody whenever that may be, sometime in July.
With okay. Jaguar Jeff Lagerman.
With me, and hopefully you'll join us again.
I would love to.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, guys.